Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm here with Ed Volbrich, and I want to thank you, Ed, for giving us the time and answering some questions and letting us pick your brain today.
Well, it's wonderful to be with you, Helen.
And I'd like you to give us your full title, because this will be a podcast that will be on our website. And so we'd like to tell people who you are.
Okay. Well, I'm the director of the Bureau of Teaching and Learning. Been with the department about a year and a half, so that means I'm not totally tainted. And prior to that time, I spent some time with higher ed, working on developing graduate programs and workforce development programs, as well as having been a superintendent and been in the central office for a number of years.
So you really, you span the gamut of experience that you bring.
If you live long enough, you end up doing something like that.
Well, that's very good. Good for us. Good for us. Ed, I'd just like to ask a couple of questions. You know that we represent the Pennsylvania High School Coaching Initiative, and I'm really delighted to hear how we're aligning so many of the statewide initiatives with Pennsylvania High School Coaching Initiative. So I just want to go over a few things and kind of pick your brain on what's happening.
Sure.
What do you think about instructional coaching and mentoring? What do you think are the strengths of having a program like that implemented in a school?
Well, some of the obvious strengths are obviously that it provides support. It provides an opportunity to focus for discussion around students and student performance, which I think is vital, as well as focusing on data and data analysis, and also looking at instructional programs and programming. I think the neat part about what has been put together in terms of the high school coaching effort is that, you know, the coaches sort of have the mentors and the teachers have the coaches. So there's a communication and a support mechanism built into the structure for coaching. It also has served as a model for other coaching efforts. Pennsylvania, as you know, and I know you're part of the collaborative board, has a number of initiatives that have coaching in it. And one of the things I feel good about this year is the fact that we've been integrating these different efforts, that we're looking at one job description, similar functions, and similar structure in programs, as well as making coaching part of the whole high school reform effort, from everything from Classrooms to the Future to dual enrollment to Project 720.
So it sounds like the state is very supportive of instructional coaching as a model.
Absolutely, most definitely.
Great. Having just said that, how do you see instructional coaching helping to improve student performance?
Well, I believe, and I think there's enough of a relationship. Maybe it's almost in the negative, but if you improve teaching performance, you improve student performance. I know there's enough evidence out there that says if you have a poor teacher 2 years in your high school career, your chances of success become that much less in success in graduation and going on to post-high school like experiences. So I think that by investing in teaching performance and investing in teachers, we're really investing in improved teaching, which will improve student performance.
Student performance is the operative phrase here. And you mentioned data. You know, obviously, if we want to improve performance, you've got to collect something that talks or speaks to what that means. So talk for a minute about student data and the collection and the analysis of that.
Well, I think, to be very honest, I'm part of a move that has a very narrow focus in terms of student performance. Obviously, we're looking at measuring reading and literacy and math skills very heavily, both as a state and nationally for that matter. On the other hand, I think that that has to be in the context of the total student. And there's data beyond how a student performs in math or reading and literacy skills that relates to a student's total character, the civility, the citizenship of the student, that I think we can measure, but it's not as immediate and it's not as assessable. I think all assessments are subjective. I don't think that there's any question about that. But I think what we can report and measure is quicker, if I may, when you get to reading and math. And obviously it's a focus, it's an important thing. But I think you could do well in reading and math and not be a really good citizen type of thing. So I think it's got to be in the context of the total student, and I think coaching provides that opportunity. Obviously, that we can't take away from reading and math; they're important. And as I said, I'm part of the whole move, but it's got to be in a total context of everything that about that student and about our community.
So, how do you paint a picture of the total student?
I think you need to look at, as the secretary would say, through the lens of a standard aligned system that is comprehensive, that takes into consideration such things as attendance, suspensions, referrals, graduation rates by using a cohort system, other areas beyond just the reading and the math. I think if you look at the Fortune 500 companies, they rated and ranked the qualities of that they would look for in employees. And reading and math obviously was way up there among the top five. But number one was cooperative and collaborative behavior. Okay. Coaching is a cooperative and collaborative process, and it models what we should be doing with students. I think that, that's what we need to look at.
Good point, and I've often said that instructional coaching is similar to executive coaching, which has that same idea. On the executive level, people work in teams, and they work in teams to achieve a goal, and that's what we're trying to do in schools. Do you see a difference between student learning and student performance?
I think I define that by assessment. I think student performance is much more narrowly defined. I think student learning is almost the education of the total person. That would be my definition. And I think we need to focus on student learning.
But it's hard to measure.
Yes, very hard to measure. Very hard to measure.
I haven't figured out that riddle yet.
nor have I.
Talking about data and the whole student and the whole teacher, if you will, what kind of changes would you like to see in teaching practices that speak to your key points?
There was a man by the name of Benjamin Bloom, which kind of dates me, but very frankly, he's still very relevant and still very important, who talked about higher order thinking skills. And as I get older and my memory gets worse, I guess I continue to say that memorization is a lower thinking skill in terms of the taxonomy. But I guess in terms of teaching behavior, what I'd like to see is kids and teachers operating more analytically, doing more problem solving, and less information giving and memorization. I think teachers, in terms of teaching practices, need to become more facilitative in their relationship with students, and let students solve problems as opposed to solving problems for students. I think too that if educators can become more analytical in their behavior, and that includes administrators as well, I think they need, they're part of that whole package, because I think they need to model that same thing about what they're doing. They then can do more in terms of their own self-assessment. Because I really believe if you're going to change teaching behavior, it comes internally. I don't believe that by using observation systems and so forth from the outside in a summative way, we have, real impact. It's till I realize what I'm doing that I begin to look at my own behavior. I think that speaks to the value of the coaching relationship in that it being a formative relationship. It's not placing a judgment on what I'm doing. It's alerting me to what you see and modeling and something that functions within the classroom, not outside the classroom.
So your philosophy would be more of helping teachers and administrators become reflective practitioners.
Absolutely.
That whole feedback system is how practices would change.
Yes.
Do you think kids can learn to be reflective practitioners also?
I think in our changing world, for what it's worth, and in terms of what my opinion's worth, I absolutely think it's crucial. I think that is improvement when we look at ourselves and sort of say, how did we do today, and what would I do differently? It's a good exercise for males when they're shaving, you know, and they look at themselves in the mirror and say, how much did I blow it today, and how much were I successful? And maybe females as well, but I think that's something that's crucial, because we can't impose change. I know there's a lot of information that supports the idea that people need to be part of change, not just be changed, but to be a part of a change. It's something I internalize. Until I internalize something, you can't really force it on me until I see it and realize it.
That's a really good point. That's a very collaborative, kind of practical problem-solving kind of ideology.
I think education is a collaborative process. The other thing with coaching, too, is obviously it breaks down that isolationism. I mean, one of the things that we're really looking at the secondary level is this compartmentalization that we've inherited from the industrial age that hasn't changed much if you really look at it. Okay, coaching breaks across those barriers and breaks those barriers down. There's a communications there that doesn't normally occur. And there's support in that. There's strength in that.
You're right. I agree. That's a good point. But thinking about that, thinking about the collaborative process and thinking about helping practitioners become reflective begs the issue of how do we do that within the school day? And so you're talking about an interdisciplinary approach to teaching the whole child, the whole student. But how do you do that given the structure, the organizational structure of the school day?
I don't believe there's any one cure-all in terms of any of the issues that face K-12 education, for that matter, particularly secondary education. But I think systemically we've structured a day that inhibits communications. I've seen some alterations in secondary schedules. Sort of my dream that I used to tell my board about we had a three-period day, and when I was a superintendent, my push was for a one-period day where you worked through collaboratively with teachers and used content as it related to what projects and problems you were solving. I think in terms of a focus, we need to look at the system and see how the system needs to be changed. If we're not going to change from so many periods in a day, then we've got to provide time for teachers and coaches to meet and work together. We've got to provide coaches with the flexibility and not give them full schedules or what have you to get into classrooms, because that's where it's at. That's where the relationship ought to flourish, in the classroom itself with students present. So I mean, I think there are things you can do systemically. I think there are things you can do within the constraints of existing schedules if you're committed to doing it. But the important thing is that responsible professionals get together and talk about youngsters and look at the data that we collect on students and problem solve in terms of what's the best course of action. What's the best technique for this?
It sounds so common sense. It sounds like such a practical approach to a systems change.
I think it is. I really do. I think I believe that from a research perspective, we've known what needs to occur. We know what needs to occur in terms of teaching and learning. It's the application of that I think we haven't successfully pulled off. But I think coaching is a neat way of getting at it in a non-threatening relationship.
What can an effective leader do in building teacher capacity to fulfill some of the things that you're talking about now?
I think an effective leader has to be supportive. I somewhat like the servant leader role to some extent, but I think a leader has to be visionary. I think a leader needs to communicate well, be a problem solver, exhibit analytical skills, support altering a schedule so that teachers have an opportunity to work with their coaches and support coaches so that they have an opportunity to get into classrooms with teachers. And I think the other thing that a leader needs to do is encourage risk-taking. I don't think we do enough of that in education. And I think we're going to make mistakes. We shouldn't jump on those mistakes. And if it's in a non-summative way, if it's in a formative way, then when I do make a mistake, it's not the end of the world. Okay, we can talk about that and say, what would you do differently? So I think a leader needs to support that. And also I think a leader knows should know and needs to be able to recognize that relationship is very precious and they shouldn't jump in the middle of it in many ways, which some of us have a tendency to do.
But it's all for good reason.
For good reason.
It's all for good reason. Given what you have just said about an effective leader, what kind of professional learning opportunities could we offer leaders in a school? And in coaching, you're really nurturing teacher leaders. So I'm not necessarily referring to just the principal of a building, but in the building, we want to foster everyone being in a community of learning, in a community of practice, everyone a learner, everyone a leader. So what kinds of professional learning opportunities do you think would be most effective?
Well, first of all, I think professional learning opportunities, the entire year in a teaching-coaching relationship is professional development. And it's in some kind of a context. For too long, we've done the hit-and-miss, one-shot arrangements. I think, and that's the strength in coaching, I believe. I think that an effective leader develops roles for teachers in varying settings, which leads to career ladders, which leads to some alternatives. When I first started out with teaching, you know, there was one way, if you were up Ruby Mobile, of moving, and that was to go into administration. I think there needs to be alternatives because we've got some very powerful teachers and really good teachers that we need to develop, and they need to exchange and interact with other teachers in a supportive way. And I think we have a golden opportunity to do that. I also think that what teacher leaders and school leaders can do is develop learning communities, you know, read a book of the month kind of thing and start a book of the month club or something of that sort among the faculty and then talk about it a little bit. And so that we're all learning. Okay, when laptops first came out, and I do remember that, so I'm old enough to remember that. You know, I used to have my administrators walk around with laptops. I was probably the one that knew how to use them the least, but I carried it around until it became part of me. The same thing with, you know, I think the way we need to model and leaders need to model with teachers.
So you change a belief, you change a practice.
That's right.
Kind of idea.
That's right. Because you've got to be able to observe that. If it's not observable, then it really, I don't know what happened.
Right.
Okay. I don't know if that makes sense, but in some way, a change in behavior has to be demonstrable. It has to be something you can see and observe.
I like the idea you're referring to study groups, that everybody is a community, in a community of practice, in a community of learning, centered around some sort of focus.
You know, exactly.
Here's the focus group. We're going to get together. We're going to learn together. We're going to share together. And hopefully our new learnings can move across the content areas.
That kind of a setting also provides teachers to take leadership roles in different settings than traditionally exist.
Career ladder movements.
Yes.
That's.
We're losing people from teaching that we can't afford to lose. I mean, you know, just listen to Jonathan Coase a little bit, and we get the idea of what's happening.
Right.
And we need to turn that around.
Right.
And the way to turn that around is a support system and some pretty intense communications, you know, that we don't isolate people.
It's powerful. It's a powerful tool. How do you think Paskey has influenced schools and teaching and learning?
I believe that PASCII has been very positive in terms of first raising awareness that there's a model for continuous professional development that we can look at, that also set really the framework for the other coaching endeavors that we have, from Reading First to Science It's Elementary and other programs in the state. So I think, you know, awareness, a model, and the significance of coaching. I think the other thing is that it provided career opportunities. Now that we're getting into the years now when we need to look at sustainability and how that's going to work, so that within the districts that have experienced this first 3 years now, when they get to the third year, we begin to look at whether or not the career ladders start to get in place, and how the model ends up being internalized within the districts and sustained within the districts. And I know that's part of the plan for future years, but I think it's developed career opportunities for people. I think people realize they have some leadership potential, and you know, kind of try it and see how it works. And I think the other thing is that we've unified the role of coaches throughout the state, as well as the process throughout the Commonwealth.
And my last question is teaching an art or a science?
I think somewhat of a cop-out on that. I think it's a little bit of both. I think there's certain things you can learn. I think very deep down inside, I have, you know, abiding belief in kids, whatever that means, and a love of kids. I think when you start with that, you can train some other kinds of behaviors. But I just recently saw the Freedom Riders.
Ah. Okay.
And obviously, you know, it's along the theme of many, you know, Mr. Holland's opus and so forth. But there's something embedded in a person that's really deep down inside, almost, you know, at the soul level, that has to do with the love of kids. And I think, you know, if you have somebody that has that, is analytical, willing to look at their own behavior, you can train them, they can educate them to become, you know, sound teachers. But you got to love the, you know, youngsters first.
I agree. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. And you've given us some really nice thoughts and some things to leave with in thinking about what the state, how the state has supported us and how we've supported the state, and how instructional coaching is one way that we can change practices.
Well, it's had a lot of impact on my own belief system too, as well. So I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.